Number one, go and attend, show up, be present at conferences, be present on LinkedIn, or be present as a thought leader. If you don't currently do podcasts or speaking gigs or anything like that, start a YouTube channel. Be unafraid, because you don't get a second chance. And if you really have a big dream, then it's going to take a lot of people to make that big dream happen. If you look at, for example, we're here in Europa Park, this was not built by one person. This is many hands. And when I'm walking through the park even, I see everything takes teamwork.
The world beyond. Michael Mack and his Emotioneers of Tomorrow. The Mack One Podcast.
Hi, everybody. Michael Mack here, the founder and CEO of Mack One. Welcome to the world beyond. Our team at Mack One creates innovative theme park designs and media-based entertainment. We are the Emotioneers of Tomorrow. In this episode, my colleague Markus Ernst will explore what the future of tomorrow holds. Let's dive right in.
Thank you, Michael, and welcome to another episode of The World Beyond, where we explore future innovations across industries and talk to the greatest thought leaders of our time. With me here today in the Studio 78, right in the heart of Europa Park, is my very dear colleague and friend Emily Ullman. Emily is not only CEO and Chief Media Officer at her very own company Hopscotch Interactive, but also a cornerstone and partner in crime of mine since the very first Aurea Award. There she acts not only as a jury member, but also as Vox Populi, the voice of the community. If I'd have to name one single person that not only has an immediate and deep understanding of emerging technologies, but also what influence they could have on our everyday lives, it would definitely be Emily. That's why I'm not exaggerating when saying it was her that significantly influenced and changed how we nowadays perceive real estate marketing through media and technology. You can tell, I'm meeting a great friend here. Emily, it's a pleasure for me to have you here, sitting right in front of me, and I can't wait to hear more about your journey and your insights. So let's dive right in with our four quickfire questions.
That's great.
One.
San Francisco or Berlin, where do you get the better coffee?
Oh, the coffee? I would say I love the coffee in California, but there's always a caveat. I like the coffee culture better in Berlin.
Great. Okay, next question.
Two.
Apple Vision Pro or Meta Quest 3? What's your pick?
Oh, it's got to be the Apple Vision Pro. Absolutely the Apple Vision Pro, without question. I mean, I love the Meta Quest 3. You can't complain. But for me, Apple Vision Pro is the next step. And I love it.
Fully agree.
Three.
What kind of XR experience has had the biggest impact on your career?
The experience that I had, the first XR experience that I had that absolutely changed everything for me was when I went into Google Earth in VR the first time. So I went into Google Earth VR, and this was in the Rift, mind you, and I had already been a believer, but going into Google Earth and being able to walk the streets that I used to live on in Berlin really was an emotional experience for me. And so that was when I realized that this really does change everything. And it enables the time travel. It enables the ability to go anywhere and be anywhere and have any experience. So that was it, without question. It was just being able to go somewhere and it felt real.
Right. Tell you what, I did the exact same thing. So when I went to Google Earth in VR the first time, I went back to the place where I was born, to the very street and the very house where I was born. And this was truly a very emotional moment.
Yeah, I think anybody who tries this for the first time is going to have that experience. And it's overwhelming, but in a very good way. And then you realize that your reality is what you believe your reality to be, right? Because then you can experience something as if it's real.
Four.
If you could have dinner with any innovator or entrepreneur, past or present, who would it be and why?
Okay, so because I've worked in the field of the intersection of, I would say, real estate and the built environment and media, immersive media for so long, I want to have dinner with the shark, Barbara Corcoran, because she, and I'm not sure if the German audience, German listeners know who she is, but she's one of the sharks on Shark Tank, which is a cool program in the US. I don't even watch that show, but she's amazing. She's a self-made, very driven, super entrepreneurial, super silly and fun innovator. And I think that I love her because of her business acumen. Mm-hmm. And I think having dinner with her would just be amazing. So yeah, probably with a shark.
Great. All right, Emily, so now that we got to know you a little bit better, let's dive a little deeper. Emily, you've had an impressive career as an advocate of the VR and AR movement. You just mentioned it in the four quickfire questions, but what exactly brought you to this topic of XR, extended reality? What fascinated you about it? And yeah, how did you get started?
So I was coming back from being in Germany for several years, and I had moved to Berlin. I was a fellow with Bosch, and so I had finished my master's program in the U.S. I moved to Berlin to be on this fellowship program, and I had left behind a career, at least when I moved to Germany, to try something different. When I, I had been working in media, not exactly immersive media, but I had worked in the Japanese anime industry for 5 years prior to moving to Germany. And before that, I worked in gaming for 4.5 years. So about 9 years of experience at that time of working in what I would say was frontier technology. The gaming industry was very, very young. And not as young, of course, as it was in the 80s, but we still were quite small. And so I took kind of a big break from media and technology when I moved to Germany. And when my husband and I moved back to the US, I happened to be arriving at a moment in time when, after spending almost 7 years living in Germany, I was coming back to California, Silicon Valley, San Francisco, and, you know, Oculus had just been born, had just been founded. And so there were these meetups in Berkeley. And so for all of the enthusiasts, and then of course all of the people who had been in the industry for the last 20 years, you know, they were sort of bringing in new people, and I was so curious about it because I felt like, hey, you know, what is this? This looks like something I would be into, and so honestly, it was meeting that community brought me into it, because the first time I tried VR, I knew immediately that it was going to be so powerful, and I put on the glasses, you know, I put on the headset and saw a 360 video. And so it was at that moment that I was like, no, nothing else, no other marketing medium will compare with this in terms of the full immersion and what it can do for you and what it would do for anyone. So that really was the moment that it clicked. And then the second moment was when I discovered the Matterport system, which is discovered Matterport right around the same time. And so I realized that I could do reality capture. So 3D scanning, 3D photography, creating virtual spaces. And so I just went completely crazy. I loved it. I went right in. I dove right in.
But and this must have been the time, I think it was in 2015, right?
Yes.
When you founded your own company, Hopscotch Interactive.
That's right.
And excuse me when I say that this is a very competitive market, right? Real estate. So, yeah, how have you observed the development of new technologies such as Matterport in this market? And what influence have they had and still have on this very industry?
Yeah, so the thing that really changed around that time was that, and I didn't have any experience in the real estate market at that time. I just jumped right into it because the technology was so exciting to me, and I felt like I was sort of underwhelmed by the technology and the media that I saw. And I learned so much in the last 9 years of having that company. But what I can tell you is that, you know, what changed is that we had amazing technology at our fingertips, and the clients that I wanted to have at the time, they were driven to stand out. And I think if you have great technology and people who have a motivation to stand out, and like you said, it's competitive. Well, one of the reasons it's competitive is because it's very hard to differentiate some, you know, like a good place from a bad place. Yep. And what do you decide on? You decide with your eyes.
Right.
Oftentimes, you decide with your eyes first. What are you interested in? What do you want to go see? And it's a process of, you know, I have to quickly decide what I want to go look at. And we don't have infinite time. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so I was really able to make relationships with these clients and show them sort of how we could shortcut that decision-making process. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Great. While you're telling this, this always reminds me about what this one thing that I always admired about you is that you never just kept your knowledge to yourself, but you became actively involved in exactly those communities that you just mentioned and organizations to share your knowledge and to exchange and to share insights and thoughts, be it the VRAR Association, AWE, or the Aurea community. So how have these experiences, this exchange with the communities, shaped your view of the future of extended reality in the entertainment industry?
So I think that these experiences were pivotal for me. Mm-hmm. And I want to go back also to just even the way that I decided to get involved and decided to share how passionate I was about it. And I think it's because I had just spent so many years in Germany mm-hmm. as a, you know, I'm very entrepreneurial, but I didn't have really a business in Germany. And so when I moved back to the United States, I was extremely motivated to start my own business. Mm-hmm. I felt very entrepreneurial mm-hmm. at that moment in time. This was 2015. And when you are in the entrepreneurial mode and in startup mode, you are evangelizing for yourself. You are evangelizing for whatever you want to share with the world. And I also looked around, and I think it was my age. You know, I was already 40. I was already, you know, or about to turn 40. And I was like, hey, I have some wisdom here.
Yeah.
And so I wasn't afraid to talk about these things that I was interested in. And so I decided this is the moment where I dive in. And this is the moment where, as a business owner and potentially as somebody who can translate, like I already knew I had the ability to translate things that were difficult, yep. difficult technologies. Yep. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I had worked in sales, in advertising media, mm-hmm. explaining anime, explaining right. gaming to large advertising agencies. So that translation work was pivotal. And then mm-hmm. and then things like the VRAR Association in San Francisco, when I was invited to do that, that came on the heels. And I don't, this is a roundabout way of telling the story, but I was invited in 2016. AWE was going to be hosting their version of the conference that takes place in mm-hmm. China. Mm-hmm. And I was very early days, not even a year old with my company. Mm-hmm. And they needed a speaker to go. They wanted a female speaker to go to China.
Yep.
And there were many people they could choose from. But mm-hmm. I had just started going out and doing presentations and sharing what I knew about Matterport mm-hmm. and all of my excitement. And so somebody came to me a week before AWE, because they didn't have a speaker yet, and they said, do you want to go? And I said,
a week before, yeah, why not?
A week before, literally 7 days before. But because I had lived in Germany and I have dealt with consulates and getting visas,
yep.
and I have a passport that's never going to be expired, you know, I always have a passport ready to go. I said, you just need me to go to the Chinese consulate in San Francisco and mm-hmm. get a visa yep. and then be on a plane in a week? Yeah, like, okay. And I was okay with the ambiguity of that invitation. And I think that that is when you say, like, how has this impacted my view of this entertainment space, and how has this impacted, you know, our even joining the Aurea Award team, mm-hmm. you know, in the beginning in 2018.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's I think it's because I'm okay with not knowing what the outcome yep. will be.
Great.
Yeah. But just knowing that it'll be amazing. Yeah. You know, that's really an important point. And I think to add to that, you know, my husband and I, we always decide, like, you know, if you have a choice between doing A and B, mm-hmm. like, how are you going to make that decision? That's
right.
that's really hard.
That's hard.
Yeah. But then we decided right after we got married, we said, well, we're just going to do the thing that's more fabulous. Mm-hmm. And so that was, you know, that's how we decide to go for the adventure.
Wow. That's so great to hear. Can you give some examples from your experience where you think extended reality truly made the difference? We discussed it before the recording of this episode. So in other words, can you recall things or experiences that would have not been possible without an immersive medium?
So I have had, I can count many, many experiences, mm-hmm. or I could name numerous industries for which that is true.
Yeah.
And I think that the visualization, so if we talk about seeing things that don't exist yet, seeing the unbuilt world, having a virtual prototype of an object or anything that is very practical in mm-hmm. its nature, mm-hmm. I think that those are some of the experiences where you can say without question, this has enabled us to either save money, mm-hmm. this mm-hmm. has enabled us to save time, this has enabled us to collaborate across the world together on decisions and decision making. Yeah. To be specific about perhaps like some of those industries, I would say medical applications, healthcare,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
And even in Germany, there's a company, Hololite, now that is doing mm-hmm. like prototyping mm-hmm. of very expensive equipment that cannot be shipped. Or if you make a prototype, it's very, very expensive. And so they are, they're one of the examples of, for example, we just had them on a panel at AWE mm-hmm. at the Apple Vision Workshop. Mm-hmm. And so learning from that team, it was really incredible to see what they've been able to do with the digital prototyping in VR. Mm-hmm. I think that those things, training, mm-hmm. think every industry has some potential benefit from XR.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I fully agree. It's the capability of visualizing things that do not exist or, as you mentioned, are extremely complicated or expensive to prototype. This is exactly where immersive media can bring in its biggest strength.
Yeah. I think also the impact, I want to also bring it back in some ways to part of our Araya community, which mm-hmm. I know we'll talk about a little bit more in a bit. But, let's also look back at the pandemic just for a second. Mm-hmm. And personally, I want to just make sure that it's something that people know about, at least my personal experience was that having a VR outlet during the pandemic was extraordinary for me. I never felt like I was locked in my house. Mm-hmm. Even if we couldn't leave or even if we weren't able to go somewhere, it was like I could hang out with my friends. I could go somewhere. I never felt trapped. And I think that was one of the things that XR enables that nothing else could enable. A phone call is one thing, but to be able to really transport yourself and to be physically like high-fiving somebody in VR across the world is like, it's totally, it's something else.
Yeah, I fully agree. And in the previous episode of The World Beyond, I discussed this topic already. And I found for myself that I feel the most important aspect about immersive media is to create the feeling of presence. And really, if I'd have to name one thing, the one thing that only immersive media can do is it's all about creating the feeling of presence. I remember when I watched the ISS experience from Felix and Paul Studios for the first time, mm-hmm. it truly gave me the feeling to be on International Space Station. And this was only possible in VR. You cannot recreate the same feeling of presence of being in a different space. And this is, for me, this is maybe the most important aspect of immersive storytelling.
Absolutely. And that is an incredible experience mm-hmm. because not everybody can be an astronaut. I mean,
right?
We're never going to be there, at least, the majority of people. And I think it also is the empathy machine. And it's been said so many mm-hmm. times that it is the presence, but it is also a presence of mind about someone else's experience.
Yep.
I also had the same, I had a very impactful experience with the Embodied Labs mm-hmm. Experience where you really are understanding somebody's experience of macular degeneration, mm-hmm. right? So losing your optical physical abilities. And it was incredible. You know, I got into the experience. I was not told what was going to happen at all in this. And I loved it so much because it changed not only my perception of, the vision and the challenges that people have, but also some cognitive decline.
That's right.
All these things that, you know, otherwise you just don't have that same empathy for because you've never experienced it. Mm-hmm. And I think that was huge for me.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember that one as well, and I fully agree. As a consultant, you educate clients on the current state of technology and its business applications. So maybe in addition to the question we just had, let's ask the other way around. Can you remember cases where people were under this misapprehension that something would automatically be better just because it was done in VR?
I think that there is a fascination with this. It's like a fetish. It's like a tech fetish where sometimes people will have invited me or my colleagues to conferences almost as the sizzle. And so they think that if we add VR, if just sprinkle it with some VR, and that will suddenly make this like an exciting and cool new techie, techie thing, and they can check a box, right? And they can go, oh, hey, we did VR. But and you would know, Marcus, because you know how much work it is and so how hard it is to make excellent experiences. And there's so many examples of that here in the park and around the world. And I think that... I think sometimes people do have this expectation that just by being in VR that it's going to be better. Mm-hmm. But it is really a question of, it comes back for me to, how do you want to tell the story?
Right.
And is that the right medium for telling the story?
Exactly.
And what are the other ones that we can explore? Because others might be just as effective. There was a workshop that we did at AWE in the focus program, which was towards executives, focused on executives. Mm-hmm. And actually, one of the cool examples was one of the guys that was doing a demonstration. He brought Legos. Lego bricks were set up on the tables. And then basically we were split up into teams and we had to compete with each other to put this back together, as fast as possible and as accurately as possible. We were going to be judged on two things. Mm-hmm. And it was brilliant. So there was a team that had the paper instructions that were visual, like the regular. There were teams that had just written instructions, like only words.
Okay.
Yeah. And then there were teams that had, they had VR. I was on the VR team.
Okay.
And there was, I think, I forget what the other one was. The point is that, is that the best way to put together Lego bricks? And, the team that won were the ones that had basically the visual experiences, just the pictures, right?
Okay.
Like the regular pictures. And the VR team came close, but what happened was that, we were not, it was a little bit like the fidelity was a little low in the headsets we were using. Mm-hmm. And so, no, it wasn't faster. It was accurate. It ended up being very accurate. And I thought we did a good job. But what was hard was the communication between three people all looking at the same thing in VR. And they didn't, and not all of them knew how to use the controllers to expand or make things bigger or smaller. And so because there was a learning curve, they couldn't jump right in. Now, if we practiced a few more times and then they did it with VR, maybe they would have ultimately been faster, but they weren't. So it just depends, I think, on the not only what the story is, but what are you trying to accomplish?
Yeah.
And sometimes you can instruct people better in your standard 2D format. But which are they going to remember? And I would say that the being in VR will help me remember that exercise a lot better,
That's true.
So so I don't know. Yeah. If you have to try and teach somebody something, a repeatable task, teaching it to them in VR first, is going to be the way to imprint that on somebody a lot better.
I really like that thought, because one thing that I've learned is that really learning is a lot about remembering. So I think you can always remember things better when you do have an emotional connection towards something. And I think establishing this emotional connection to a thing to learn can be achieved in mixed reality or in virtual reality, just in different ways, and maybe more relatable or more memorable ways. Would you agree?
Yeah, I do. Absolutely. I think that the, again, it has to do with your focus also. Mm-hmm. You're in a distraction-free environment.
Distraction-free. Yeah, that's true.
Right? Yep. So you're taking all those distractions away. And so if you need somebody to focus on something, then virtual reality does enable that in a way. You know, full occlusion VR will focus you on something. And we don't often get the chance to give something our full attention.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're right. It's so great when you talk about that. This often reminds me about, it reminds me of our shared history in the ARIA Award. And we've known each other since the very first ARIA Award. It's 7 years ago already. And over the course of this now 7 year history, you've seen more than, I think, it was more than 60 startups pitch on stage with big ambitions, with dreams, and sometimes, I would say even groundbreaking innovations that have an impact on entire industries. So after those 7 years of ARIA, what would be your interim conclusion after those years? Which technologies have we seen come and perhaps go again? And which do you currently see rising on the horizon?
Well, I think that if I look back to the very first ARIA, I think that we had this really amazing leadership team here where, between, I think, also Kathleen Cohen as the jury chair and you and the team and, of course, Iconomy and Clark Parsons and Felix Stuma and everybody, you know, we have been able to scour the globe for not just the top 60 that make it into being finalists, but pretty much all of these startups that show up on our radar are coming to us from people in the industry, and especially over the last few years, the recommendations, the nomination process has meant that if you came to an ARIA award, then you had the privilege of being able to nominate somebody to be considered as a finalist, and so I think that made it so that the companies that we were closely examining were ones where we saw something special, right? Mm-hmm. There had to be something special because there were a lot of companies that were maybe a technology that solved a small piece of a problem, or they were, they were not quite ready for a mass market, and that wasn't even a criteria really. Right. But if you look back and you say, okay, well, in the first ARIA, we were talking about digital twins, and I would say thanks to Kathleen Cohen, and we were talking about what that looks like to be to have a digital twin, and to have that digital twin live into the future. We are at a moment now, I think, especially with artificial intelligence and with this notion, and this is one of the themes for the next ARIA, is that, we now see how artificial intelligence and virtual reality and the metaverse are sister technologies. Right. They are going to influence and cross-influence each other for absolutely into the future. And so I think that we didn't quite have a way to define what a digital twin was, even though we could say, well, this is like you, but your digital version, or you in the future. And I think Kathleen even showed like a list of like 30 different definitions. Do you remember? She shows us the slide and it's like, here's 30 ways we talk about a digital twin. And so no matter which startup it is that we're looking at, because these are frontier technologies, we are seeing the definition that becomes the generally understood definition.
I agree.
It becomes more clear to us over time. So in 5 years' time, we'll all be able to say, I understand what an artificial intelligence is. But now if you ask a general person, they may know just a regular person in the world, what is artificial intelligence? They'll go, oh, I think it means you can ask, like, it's like Google search, but better, or, you know, or they'll understand that it can shortcut work for them, but they don't understand and they can't necessarily easily define it. And I think that that's where we're at, is that we, you know, we look back and we see these companies that are doing transformational technologies, and they seem like they're on the frontier, because they are.
They are.
And in a few years' time, that will become more defined. So I don't know if that answers your question, but I think that that's really my biggest takeaway and impression from all these companies, is that sometimes what seems like the distant future has just, it just means that the world hasn't caught up, and the world needs time to process what the technology is.
Absolutely. I fully agree. And I think you summarized it perfectly, what Aurea is about, because every single edition of Aurea is exactly this very moment where those definitions of those future topics are made, in that very moment. And in 5 years from now, and we will come to this question in an instant, we will know exactly those definitions. And they have been made in exactly those years where we debated and discussed them during the Aureas. Now, as we reach the end of this episode, I want to, I want to take all of what you mentioned into account. And if I would be, I'm 37 now, so I'm not a young founder anymore, but if I would be a founder, and enough, maybe if I would be a little bit younger, what advice would you give to me as a young founder today, to who wants to gain a foothold in this field?
So what I would say to a young entrepreneur, and I would say it to you, I would say it to anybody, I would say, well, first of all, be a part of the Aurea community. And I think that being a part of a community is the real answer to the question. I think that if you want to be a founder who is supported by your peers, it is real. It's like, everybody says, you know, if you want, what is it? I'll mess up the saying, but it's like, if you want to go fast, go it alone. If you want to go far, go together.
That's true.
And this is where this mentality and this belief in the power of the community is something that is what connected me immediately to this space, not only because it's nice to be with people who are also crazy like you, but, you know, you want to surround yourself by people who have the same passion and know how hard it is. I'm a several time founder now of different startups. I've started a few different companies, and reinventing yourself is okay if you fail. It's actually, it feels good to take the knowledge that you learn from past experiences and apply them in new ways. And so I would say, number one, like, practical advice. Number one, go and attend, show up, be present at conferences, be present on LinkedIn, or be present as a thought leader. If you don't currently do podcasts or speaking gigs or anything like that, you know, start a YouTube channel, be unafraid, because you don't get a second chance. And if you really have a big dream, then it's going to take a lot of people to make that big dream happen. If you look at, for example, we're here in Europa Park. This was not built by one person. This is many hands. And when I'm walking through the park, even, I see everything takes teamwork. Everything takes like a group effort. And even if it's one person's big vision, that person needs to be able to get other people to believe in their vision and to want to make it happen. So say I was a founder that had an idea to bring let's say the world's best experience in on the Apple Vision Pro together right now. I would need to attract investors. Yep. I would need to attract fans. I would need to attract people that would listen to me through the hard times. I would need to be able to talk about my product and talk and learn what my market needs. And if I don't have a market yet, how to create that
market.
So all of those things they require that you put yourself out there. So you just have to be willing to take those risks and learn how to build resilience, because it's not going to be easy, but you will be rewarded by that community, and I think you will be supported. So I think, start soon, but be courageous.
That's great. Oh, okay. I just finished taking up all the notes. I'm noting everything you
say. Motivation.
Okay. Thanks a million for sharing those insights. Really, I could continue for hours listening to you. It's so great. But I think looking at the clock, I think we've reached the end of this episode. And maybe you know, as you maybe know, each of our episodes always ends with a very specific question. So if we zoom out again and take a look at the bigger picture and end with this specific question, Emily.
7 years from now.
How do you see our world in 7 years from now?
So let's see. In 7 years from now, I really believe that we are at a moment where this notion of augmenting our daily experience with a wearable device. So I've been so excited. I have my Meta Ray-Bans, or Ray-Ban Metas here. And I don't think that it necessarily is going to be over the next 7 years that we are going to be integrating our daily experiences necessarily with a field of view, like with a visual overlay. But I think we will all really get to the point in the next several years where having, you know, augmented reality, augmented sound, a personal assistant, you know, an augmented personal assistant, going through the whole spectrum of it not being, you know, not necessarily just being in your pocket anymore, but definitely being a wearable device. I think that that's now. And I think devices like this show me the way, because it's not us changing our daily behavior in any other way than I'm just wearing my sunglasses or I'm just chatting with my friends. And I just answered my phone on something as simple as like these, you know, headphones that I'm just wearing on my head. So those are some of the ways that I think that, the next 7 years are going to suddenly feel like, gosh, I can't believe that 7 years ago, this isn't how we just kind of all naturally went about having information at our fingertips and in a more natural way. So, yeah, so that's my quick take on it.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Emily, really, for letting us and letting me be part of your journey today, sharing your insights and your experiences. And you can bet that we will always keep an eye on you and your projects and how you will continue helping to shape the future, but not only of real estate, but also of immersive entertainment. And of course, I also want to thank you, dear listeners, for tuning into this episode. I hope it has brought value to you, so make sure to tune in again next time, where we will again uncover more of what the future holds.
Thank you, Marcus.
Thank you for this inspiring exchange. Together as Emotioneers, we have once again gained fascinating insights and expanded the boundaries of the known. To all our listeners out there, remember that the world is full of undiscovered possibilities. Go out and shape our future. Until next time on The World Beyond.
Mac One presents The World Beyond. Brought to you by Michael Irmak and his Emotioneers of Tomorrow.